Right, so now we're going to go to a different section of the course, which is not a detailed discussion of computer architecture, where we'll actually discuss a lot of things like distributed shared memory and latency in more detail, but some sort of overview of the principles behind the architectures of high-performance computers. So if you're designing, if you're sitting there trying to design for the next generation or high-performance computer that's going to sell a lot of machines, you sort of have two choices you can make. Well, you probably have several choices, but you have two broad classes of choices you can make. You can be very bold and choose a radically new technology. You can build it out of different things. So, you know, once you've invented an anthill, you could decide that was a nifty parallel computer which had certain capabilities, but then we better invent bees. We could then use bees as a technology, or monkeys, or people, and then we get parallel computers of greater capability. In the so that's technology. That's the substance or the thing which we make our computer of. But once we've chosen what we're going to make the computer of, then we can design it in different ways, and that's called the architecture, which is the sort of a less radical choice. So we're going to discuss both technologies and architectures. And we'll briefly discuss some of the technology choices, in particular quantum technologies or superconducting technologies. Which are sort of radical technologies which you might want to use. Even within the sort of traditional CMOS approach, I don't know whether you view this as an architecture choice or a technology choice. There's sort of been an interesting commercial feature, namely, there's been a debate as to whether you should build your computer out of existing microprocessors, like the IBM SP2, if you like, is built out of an existing IBM chip, RS6000 chip, or the Silicon Graphics Power Challenge machine is built out of the R10000 or whatever your latest MIPS chip is, and the T3D was built out of the Digital Alpha chip. So these were all conventional microprocessors. Well, the other choice is to say, well, these are not very good units. We better, we can obviously design a chip that's better for parallel computing, better designed for parallel computing. I showed you last time, say, the NQ2, which was a chip carefully designed for parallel computing in that it had communication channels built into the chip, enough to wire a high-dimensional hypercube, and it had mechanisms in there which were going to make parallel computing faster. The problem with designing a custom chip is basically the time and effort it takes to build a custom chip. And so this is what you call, this one we'll come back, and I think we already mentioned it, is the sort of silicon juggernaut problem, or the CMOS juggernaut, or the consumer juggernaut problem, namely, incredible amounts of money are put in the consumer electronics industry. And the nice number which Gordon Moore mentions on his tape, which I keep threatening to show you, is that if they look at, if the semiconductor industry estimates how much money they need to invest for the next generation of microprocessors, it's $40 billion. So here you have an enterprise building the next generation Pentium, or whatever it's going to be called, chip, which is going to sell 100 million PCs. If you divide 40 billion by 100 million, I think it's $400 per PC. So every PC, actually there's $400, I believe, which is just the investment in the plant the manufacturer of that PC. Let's hope that's right. Yeah, I think it is. And that's sort of, why is that an interesting number? So here you come along as a, you know, as a graduate student at Syracuse University, well, I can build a better chip. So here you are, you invest your $1,000 in building a new chip, and so it looks better, but then you have to go into manufacture and stuff, and it's very difficult to compete with this entire enterprise, which is all carefully optimized and making wonderful PC chips. So they're not as good as parallel processing chips. But there's $40 billion behind them, and that makes them come out real fast, and they can make the very best use of the latest feature size and get it reduced. So they're on an incredibly accelerated schedule, which makes it extremely difficult for novel ideas to get in there, because that's $40 billion, you just can't compete. So this is, if you like, so this is a plus and a minus of technology. The fact that semiconductor technology is so successful and doing so wonderfully makes it very hard for any other ideas to creep in because of the huge investment that's needed to be competitive. So there's a huge barrier. And so a good example, I think, is, I'm not a great expert in this area, is gallium arsenide. Gallium arsenide, I think, is better in many ways than CMOS silicon technology, and it's mainly because it's faster. It's just electrons, it's got lower resistance, so it's got the electrons just go faster, so it has higher clock speed. But it's only a factor of two. So there's no way the industry can justify the huge investment necessary to switch or even add capability. I mean, they can't duplicate to do gallium arsenide, even though you can share some things. It's just not competitive. So we'll come back to this when we mention superconducting technology, which, because if we compare gallium arsenide, it doesn't stand a chance. It's only a factor of two. But superconducting is a factor of several hundred, in some sense better than silicon technology. So it might stand a chance. So that's sort of technologies. So I'm not allowed to talk about it until we do this.